sirens call. Like the tiger of old, the storm and the bone for the tiger.
And welcome back to Richmond Tiger Talk. My name's Nick.
And I'm Andy.
And I had quite an emotional reaction this week, Andy. Then when they announced Jeff Holger as the homecoming hero, really, actually, felt like quite a palpable moment I don't know how many people have this experience, but like Jeff Hogg, he debuted pretty much the year after we really started going regularly to the football. You know, he was the full forward through some pretty lean years. But actually, weirdly enough, I know you had your early formative experience of being deeply traumatised by the sight of a semi-naked David Cloke in the Richmond changing rooms. But for me, it was seeing Jeff Hogg at the Chadstone Cinema and actually seeing that, oh, you're actually quite a normal-sized human being. Like, he's sort of so used to seeing footballers sort of godlike creatures that actually seeing him as a, oh, you're quite normal. That was actually a shock for me.
Yeah, and look, frankly, you don't want your full forwards to look, especially your 1980s full forwards, to look normal.
Well, if you look I disagree, because he's the same height as Dunstall, and he's taller than Gary Ablett Jr. And thinking about that, it did make me think that the changes in football have made the 6'3" fast leading full forward obsolete.
I would point out, Nick, that if you take a look at what Dunstall and Ablett looked like then, you know, the muscle training and perhaps even the drug testing regimes were quite different. Whereas Jeff Hogg remained remarkably undefined. So if you'd seen Dunstall or Ablett in that same cinema wearing a T-shirt...
Dunstall wasn't a contested marking beast. He wasn't a pack marking guy. He was a very lead mark.
Oh, I remember. But if you took a look at what he looked like in 1989, you wouldn't have thought, there goes an ordinary looking human being.
Well, height-wise was the big thing. Hogg wasn't huge either. I just don't think that lead mark forward is anywhere near as feasible these days with how much less space there is in football.
No, I think you're very much right with that. But I also think Jeff Hogg, who was a very accomplished footballer in many ways, he averaged 3 goals a game the last year he played for us over 19 games. Off a hardly dominant 1993 Richmond team.
Yes, a couple of years away from being good Richmond team.
Yeah.
It is. The two things...
Pretty poor Badrick team.
Yeah.
And whether the good young midfielders we had were still too young and we hadn't added the class of Broderick and the maturity of Gale.
You say that, but, you know, that's... Hogg was how we got... We got Broderick and we got...
Oh, no, I was deliberately mentioning them for that reason.
Yeah. I think it's... Have we had a bigger blockbuster trade since? I'm not sure we have.
No, not... I mean, you rarely get player for player these days.
Yeah, and especially not high-profile players like that. You know, we've traded... You know, we got draft picks for Brad Ottens. we traded picks for Prestia, got draft picks for Lids. Like, none of them... But none of them felt seismic none of those circumstances were we trading away our captain. Like it was a pretty unique scenario.
It was. In fairness, if you'd gone back to 1993 off season, that other clubs wouldn't have described it as blockbuster.
It was still a big thing. Like Butch Gale was a good player if under a bit of an injury cloud, but Broderick was really good.
Yeah, but
Elliot wasn't bad either.
I think we forget how obscure players were on how bad teams players really got buried, because, you know, TV coverage was very much limited to the good teams for a quarter or two a week. It wasn't like now where you have, you know, better statistics and better coverages of the good teams. You're basically, you know, football was really defined by the good popular teams at the top of the ladder. You know, like, do you remember how desperately we had to search for attention for anything about Richmond?
Yeah.
And now, probably like you, I regularly don't read Richmond articles because I know what they're going to say, because there's so much coverage now. And that's partly because we're good, but you just have so much more access to information about your team now, even if you're at the bottom of the ladder.
I know. And that, look, as great as the trade was for us, it also felt kind of dirty because Hogg had a back injury and was never really the same for Fitzroy. So, yeah, it's only the homecoming thing, but I actually had quite an emotional response to it.
Yeah, Jeff Hogg is a very important part of Richmond history. And I think your earlier observation, although it's not what you meant about the, you know, he was... You know, he was likable. He was that Mother's Day massacre. And, you know, he was something that's gone out of the game, which is the sort of the marquee full forward for a bad team.
And he was shorter than McIntosh, Broad, and Grimes. none of whom are players, key position players.
Yes, and had spectacularly badly defined arms, which is, you know, doesn't mean you're bad at football.
But he kicked 10 goals against Collingwood.
He'll always have that. And actually played a lot of games for us.
One of my favourite games in person, that the Mother's Day Massacre. I'm sure I'm hardly alone in that, but genuinely good fun.
You know, Nick, just to continue this discussion to avoid as long as possible having to talk about the North game, you know,
I've got a thing for the North game next, which I think you'll quite enjoy.
I would love to go back in history. And by the way, Nick, just another segue on a segue. I discovered this on Twitter that multiple people listen to our podcast apparently while they go to sleep.
Is that a good thing?
I'm not sure. I do. I must admit, I listen to podcasts too to go to sleep sometime, but I really listen to my favourite ones. So I'm just going to presume that people are doing that.
Run with that, shall we?
Yeah, I was slightly tempted to let off an air horn randomly halfway through the podcast, but no, I'm not going to do that. But I'd love to have a time machine just to go back. I know this is a very unambitious thing to do with a time machine, you know, not stop world peace or assassinate Hitler. I'd like to go back.
Baby Hitler, you're in for it.
I'd like to go back and just go back and stand on the outer at all those old games and just experience what it was like to watch football back in the day. I suspect it's probably not a completely romantic experience, but it's a part of our history that's lost, but it is it's still part of the game today. It's part of what built it today.
Yeah, and I think part of the attraction of the AFLW is returning to the suburban grounds, just with, you know, absolutely, food trucks and functional toilets.
But you know, the sight lines are good in those grounds, and 10,000 people sounds noisy and exciting.
True.
And you know, I think the AFLW crowds are more tame, but in the sort of modern era where people are getting kicked out for, you know, insults that 15 years ago people would have thought were incredibly mild and harmless.
That guy got banned from the cheer squad. I don't think he got kicked out.
I thought he got a 3-game banned from the ground, from games, or just the cheer squad? Did he?
Just the cheer squad, yeah.
But you know, he's still. It's just.
But as Caroline Wilson, very neatly skewered the AFL, because they blamed Richmond, and then Richmond said, "Oh, we've spent the past 3 days on the phone to the AFL about this."
Yeah, it was clearly been led by the AFL. It is. Yeah. It's something that's come from the AFL. They've set the tone on this. And because they want to take all the love and the attraction.
No, it's the typical AFL problem, is that having hung the umpires out to dry after Anzac Day, where it got to the point of the AFL umpires going onto radio themselves because they weren't getting feeling backed up by the AFL at all when they'd been criticised in public. So the AFL typically overreacts in a ham-fisted fashion, as it does to so many, you know, lurching from crisis to crisis, and, you know... Many of which are self-created. Like the idea of recognising old VFA premierships.
Oh, my God. So what were they thinking? Like, it's a count. Like, as soon as you do that, you undermine your existing count. Like, but even giving it airtime creates a problem. It's just...
One of the Geelong premierships... in the year they won it, they won fewer games than another team, and when you just had to finish on top to win. And one of the games they played under rugby union rules.
That's a really nice stat. I didn't know that.
Yeah, it was frontier territory. Like they were just forming the game. Like it is part of our history, but there's like they formed a new breakaway competition from the VFA. Like, it's a separate competition. Ugh. Anyway.
What about the North Melbourne game?
Well, one thing about the North Melbourne game is, you know, it's unusual for players from losing teams to win the Rising Star. But thankfully, Sydney Stack had such an overwhelming game, and we were the Friday night game on television. So finally,
there does seem to be a correlation there, doesn't there?
Finally, he got an extremely well deserved Rising Star nomination. But that actually wasn't what I wanted to talk about. But rather, what struck me from his performance against North was when he was playing on Taron Thomas. Now, Taron Thomas, for those of us who followed the draft too much, like he was always a big deal. He was always touted as a top 10 draft pick. He slipped a little bit in the actual draft because he was an academy selection for North, but he was still a surefire first round draft pick. And normally, even if people, you know, max out. Like, Liam Baker is very much a maxed-out version of his potential. But you can still see why he wasn't a first-round draft pick, because he's 5'8" and skinny and not blindingly quick.
And, you know, look, he has good skills, but he doesn't have amazing skills, you know, the skills that compensate for those athletic deficiencies.
Yep. The guys...
In a drafting contest, not in an actual AFL context. Anyway, yep. Sorry, go on.
So Taron Thomas, 6'1", agile, good overhead, quick without being blindingly fast. You know, just a really good all-round athlete. Those guys are first-round draft picks if they can play football. And, you know, he can play football. If you watched that game on Friday night, you would not have been able to tell out of him or Sydney Stack was the first-round draft pick athletically. I had that thought in the second quarter, and nothing that happened after that point convinced me otherwise.
No, true. I mean, you know, the now semi-legendary Sydney Stack highlight reel that's on the club website for his AFL, like, it's just for his Rising Star nomination, it's just full of things that look like first-round draft pick acts, you know, just the cleanness, the awareness around the ground, the disposal, obviously, his, you know, his aerial ability, everything about him, his skills, everything about him is screams. I don't know. Do you think if the draft was happening again, like, okay, you still got to give a bit of a discount because, you know, he missed trainings. He's not the ideal. He's not the perfect kid. So that still happened. You can't pretend it didn't. But, you know, just seeing his football form, where do you think he goes in the draft?
Towards the end of the first round.
I was going to go higher than that. I was going to go about eighth or ninth.
Yeah, there's some really good players in the draft, and all the big kids we haven't really seen yet. Yeah. And when we see them, there's some pretty spectacular athletes.
And in fairness, you know, he is a flanker.
He is a flanker. Although I'm getting more convinced about his ability to play midfield. Like his ability to think through in tight and have that. You know, midfielders don't need to be blindingly quick. They just need to be first step quick in traffic. Oh, yeah. And he is, to be an inside midfielder.
Yeah, and he consistently gets the ball. I mean, he had 24 this week, but, you know, sort of playing off, he's averaging 17 a week, which is not huge numbers, but he's a first-year player playing a position that's not easy to get a lot of touches in. And it's not like he's any way developed the fitness. Remember, he had a shorter preseason than a lot of everyone else.
His preseason was notable for the amount that he threw up. Like, he got better reasonably quickly, apparently, but he was... Yeah, he was starting a long way back.
Yeah, I'm just checking. And, you know, he's getting... his amount of uncontested disposals is still pretty low.
Hmm.
He's working hard for his stats. There is... I'm inclined to believe... It sort of look again next year what he looks like. Because you... Next year, you could see if we're right, he's going to start coming into the midfield rotation in the second and third year because you'd want him in there because his hands are so slick. If he can play midfield, you'd play him midfield, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I've mentioned before, but I like the possibility of the Reece Conker role, of where he does a couple of centre bounces at the end of quarters. Like, I think that's quite realistic in not that long a period of time.
Yeah, and, you know, he's already done more high-quality contested disposals than I've ever seen Reece Conker do. And I'm not saying that bagwig Reece Conker. He's just – Reece Conker was not a particularly – he was earnest as an inside player, but, you know, he didn't have particularly good skills for an inside mid. And, you know, Nick, we don't actually – like, that's not one thing we're stacked with. We're not stacked with young midfielders.
So to speak,
Yeah, I mean – Yeah, Ross aside, who is very promising, and perhaps ISOD in the future. Now, on the game, Nick.
Oh, that was the end of my notes.
Oh, fair enough. Just a random thing. This thread on Putton Road End, the thread for this game is three times as long as the thread for the Essendon game.
Really?
Which just goes to show, doesn't it, how...
People love being miserable.
Yeah, well, it's a really up and down season. So we've now lost two games... You know, obviously we've got a winning record, but we've lost two games where we've been basically three goal favourites.
Yeah.
And, you know, won several games where, you know, most hardcore fans like us were sort of,
ready to slit our wrists.
We were pushing aside the women and children to get in the lifeboat first because we thought everything was doomed. It's just this. I mean, this is the downside of what's been these fantastic, exciting, unexpected wins, is that it's a young team, considerably younger than North. I know it's a bad game when I'm going back to check the average age, which I always do quicker when we've lost. Considerably younger, just a whole bunch of guys didn't show up statistically on basic measures.
How much do you blame playing at... Marvel?
Really good question, isn't it? I mean, we clearly hate playing there this year.
Well, particularly, it's been a thing before, but the small forwards don't, don't find space, And that was a pretty bad game. A couple of goals from Dan Butler aside, it was...
He had six touches.
Yeah.
And Shy had 11. Jack Higgins had just a disgraceful 11. I mean, I know he's only a second-year player, but, you know, we rely on him.
We need better from him.
So
he's another guy. He plays a bit more midfield, but part of what works for him is he's got a great big tank and covers a lot of ground and can get some uncontested ball. And, yeah, we were not generating much uncontested ball.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, to your theory, Nick, like, if you look at the stat line, you know, we've done a lot of the key indicators, but we usually are. But, like, the inside 50s were normal, were even, and we got absolutely flogged. Like, that's quite unusual.
That is also partly on expected score, so based on where people's shots for gold took the margin was 20 points rather than 37. Like, it was just...
Well, that's interesting.
It was just one of those days that North were getting a lot of 50-50 shots, and they had momentum up, and our midfield pressure was making our defence look bad.
Yeah, but let's not over-romanticise it. We did kick the two garbage toll games, so even if you... So it's a 32-point lead if you take away the last 5 minutes of the game where it was garbage time.
We certainly got beaten badly, but yeah, it was... Yeah, we certainly deserved to lose, but it was just one of those... Partly it was one of those nights that... Yeah, and as Dimmer said in his press conference, the pressure wasn't there.
And
without Rance, we can't get away with that. We have less margin for error. And they've got an enormous forward line.
And I thought the defence played us really well. A lot of intercept marks at key moments. A game, maybe this comes back to the ground setup. It's just there's not those deep pockets where we can kick those sort of defensive, the sort of almost defensive entry into 50 where you're kicking into its spot to create a contest and, keep it down there, which we do very well. And, it's harder to find that in the Marvel because the pockets are shallower and the ground's not as long, so the midfield players can get back. So, I think... it was one of the... We often do the reverse, is that you can't statistically find a basic measure of why we've won the game. And it sort of went the other way this time. Also a bit depressing that my man Ivan Saldo only got four touches around the ground.
Yeah, he had zero at halftime.
Yeah. I mean, Goldstein only had 11, but, still.
It wasn't... And it's easy to forget that... part of Nank's value is how much he creates a contest when the ball hits the ground, and if he was trying hard, but it wasn't happening.
Yeah, and none of our midfielders were particularly impressive. I mean, it was nice to have Cochin back. Mm. He looked all right, but he had 23 touches, so did Prestia.
He was it. His game time was being pretty badly managed. I mean, Dusty's first half up forward was, awesome.
Great. Yeah, it was great. But he had 21 touches.
Yeah, but partly that he was having to play forward because he was the only forward who looked like he was going to be capable of winning a one-on-one contest.
Mm. Yeah, look.
I am mildly surprised that you're not taking more solace from not being beaten by... Goldstein in hitouts for perhaps the first time ever.
I know we were. It was 40-39, according to the stats I'm looking at.
No, but Saldo versus Goldstein.
Oh, okay, yeah, good point. It would have been a lot sweeter had we won. I said to you, my dream for this game is that we win the game and we win the hitouts and we won the clearances. And actually, we effectively drew even on hitouts and clearances, but sort of when theirs is so much better. And yeah, so it was a draw rather than a victory, and unfortunately, it turned out to be a hollow draw. But had we won, it would have come up very high in the list of things I talked about. Then again. Had we won, Ivan Soldo probably would have had more than four touches.
Yeah. Noah Bolter. I thought Bolter impacted the contest at times, but he had seven clangers from 11 disposals. It's quite an effort.
It is. Can we just rehash a more positive conversation we had? We were talking offline with a few friends about Bolter comparisons. And it's sort of been on the internet a bit, but, the obvious one that people always talk about is either Richo or Rance. If you want to limit yourself to Rich Van Nye, I think Richo's the more accurate one. But I think the even more interesting one is the Adam Good ones. Now, what is it that reminds you of Adam Goods?
Adam Goods was a much better forward right from the start. So I'm still really struggling to find a comparison, but he was a really effective midfielder who got who got tackles, he won the ball, he got some hit outs, he kicked goals. Like, he was a... I mean, he won a couple of Brownlow medals, but he was a pretty unique player. And he was a junior ruckman who was too short to be a full-time ruckman, but was still, like, still as an athlete, really impacted the contest. And I'm really... Look, the only other thing I've come up with is to call him a rich man, rich man's Ray Hall.
The thing about one of the reasons, and it's not my idea originally, but sort of, you know, you look at Good's career, and he didn't start playing until his second year, like Bolter, and was a pick in the '40s.
He was a 6'4" ruckman out of country Victoria. Like those guys are really often, it's unusual that those guys successfully convert to another position and make a career. Like he was pretty remarkable.
He was, and I remember watching him, and he didn't learn how to run until later in his career. He had better goal sense, you're right, but something like Bolter, Bolter hasn't quite learnt how to cover the space to get easy possessions yet. And, you know, Goods was the same. In his first year, he only averaged 13 possessions. Now, in his second year, he got kicked 40 goals, but, you know, he didn't actually average above 20 possessions a game till about his eighth season. And until then, he was for the first 3 years of his playing career, so actually the first 4 years, he was a below 15 possession a game player. It took him a long time to turn into Adam Good. So I don't know. There's something about his X factor enthusiasm and his surplus athleticism, you're not quite sure what it's going to be used for. It does remind me a bit of Young Goods, because anyway, that's
yeah, I like a bit there. He is both top 20 in the whole AFL for both clangers and bouncers.
There you go.
That's a pretty young. As I said, he's a really unique player, and yeah, as happens with, you know, young players and particularly young raw players, you get the ups and downs. I thought Shane Edwards played well.
I thought Rankins loved his game. Basic stats didn't, but the event, you know, because he had 17 touches.
I think he was in AFL Team of the Week.
Yep.
He's in the AFL Ratings Team of the Year. Yeah, he's going well.
Yeah, actually, it didn't hate Jack Higgins' game either.
Yeah, the eye test was less... less yes. convincing.
I hated Shea Bolton's, but I think that's pretty obvious too, because he had 10 touches and no goals.
Bashir Hooley still in amazing career best ball winning form.
Yep. If you're playing basic fantasy football, you want Bashir Hooley on your team.
Yeah. Good times. Anyone else strike the fancy?
No. I'm sort of in a bit in denial. It's sort of like this year's it's a hard year. It's a hard, the losses are hard to take, I must admit.
Yeah, the highs have been high and the lows have been low. Like, it's been a weird year. Like, I've loved big parts of it, but yeah, it's been weird.
Yep.
Have you ever been to a game at Arden Street?
No, that's well before my time.
Yeah.
No. Oh, no, a practice game. No, never.
No, me neither. Like, I remember we went to a practice game at Glen Ferry, which, you know, hasn't been an AFL venue for decades. But, no.
Yeah, nice part of the world, that, actually.
Hmm?
Nice part of the world.
Yeah. But I looked at the VFL game and there and thought, oh, I'd actually quite like to go.
Yeah. Okay.
There was a couple of reasons to watch the VFL, because unfortunately they had a disappointing loss as well, their first loss for the season. It was yet another round of Patrick Naish MA rated highlights.
Yeah, absolutely. Who do you bring him in for? What position does he play? I mean, sorry, 28 disposals, 2 goals, sorry. I should actually address the issue before we move on.
And quite a few goal assists. I don't know. Yeah, I mean, one of the disappointing small forwards is the obvious answer, but I don't know.
Who is the disappointing small forward?
Oh, there were so many.
Oh, sorry, small forward. Sorry, yeah. I thought he was small back, but the problem is he's not playing any of those positions.
So you're having to rejig the team, but yeah, it just feels like he's really beating down the door. I think the other... Look, the Egg Lamosi Smith, he played... He kind of strikes me as a poor man's Sydney Snack. Like, he's not as clean, and he's a bit mistake-prone, but he's athletic, and he competes really well in the air. And, you know, I think he's pretty confident. So, but I don't think he's close to senior football. But
he may well have been playing right now if Sydney Stack haven't exploded onto the scene.
Well, true, but Jack Graham had a pretty good game.
Did he?
24 disposals, 10 tackles, 8 inside 50s. That's much more like what I want to see from him.
Add a 10 to that disposal column and shave off 2 tackles. Call me back.
Yeah,
I mean, let's not forget what Anthony Miles and Sammy Lloyd used to do in the VFL.
True, but it's a lot of inside 50s. Jacob Townsend, a lot of work as well. Sadly, I don't think he's close, and particularly since I'm the proud owner of a brand new Jacob Townsend fan club T-shirt, courtesy of a friend of the podcast, Ryan. So I am ready should he get picked again. But yeah, here.
I'd rather have 22 of Jacob Townsend than 24 of Jack Graham. Sorry, I know that's really superficial, but I don't know. There are intangible benefits to Jacob Townsend that no other player on our list brings.
I know. Plus great joy. Dan Rioli, sadly, form still a bit off. People liked Riley Collier Dawkins' work inside. Again, yeah, he could stand to win a few more foot. A bit like that. He's one of the very few players who needs to learn how to win more outside ball, which is kind of, you know, you need to get more of the easy thing rather because you're going okay on the harder stuff. But actually, there's a skill to knowing where to run to make yourself dangerous. Well, by skill and fitness, and yeah, then it's still a work in progress.
Yeah. Yeah, agreed. I was a bit disappointed with Child didn't sort of back up his fantastic work.
No. Yeah. 23 disposals to 5?
Yeah.
A little bit disappointing. And Fraser Turner as well, sort of well down on previous numbers, more so the pity.
Yeah. Yeah, agreed. And Connor Manning, one positive thing, you know, 21 disposals off.
Yeah, actually played quite well.
It was respectable.
Thankfully, the women won just to avoid a complete non-event. And we're still, sadly, we quite haven't seen the full weaponized version of what the AFLW team will look like. They had Sabrina Frederick cheering for them rather than playing for them, unfortunately. Yeah, but Katie Brennan and Monique Conti are dominating in midfield. It is. I think I mentioned before, I was looking through the VFLW profiles and how weird it was seeing in the profiles their occupations. I couldn't remember. I remember AFL players used to have their occupations in their profiles.
Yeah, I was saying it's a nice old-school touch.
Yeah, but it hasn't been for a long time. Yeah, because I think if you did ask them these days, you'd get some pretty funny answers on, you know, professional Fortnite player.
I was about to say, yeah, PlayStation.
Geelong.
I was more confident about this before I did more research.
Yeah, I know. Are you surprised the line's only 9.5 points?
Yeah, I wouldn't have it. I had exactly the same thought. I see it about as a 15-point line.
Yeah. Number one in the AFL in points per game. Number one in least points conceded per game.
I reckon that the AFL's a lot of the but a lot of their bookmakers, the algorithms they use have very much adjusted for the MCG effect for Richmond. I think if you looked at the historical betting line of Richmond, that we performed very well at the MCG relative to expectations, and that the bookies now favour that in their lines. Sorry to interrupt.
Yeah, possibly so. And their MCG form, well, they've only played two games. Well, they beat the Magpies by 7 points, and they beat the Hawks by 23, and Bombers by 32. So yeah, I suppose that's pretty solid without being overwhelming. I think there is their overall numbers are skewed by playing down at their taxpayer subsidised paradise.
Yeah, but you know, they got a percentage of 144, and you know, their one loss was to the Giants by 4 points.
Yeah, and the Giants who also play on a really small home ground, just because I'm kind of obsessed with that these days. Yeah, oh, look, it's just been one of those seasons where sort of they've rejigged the team and everything's come up apples. Like, Gary Rowan was an afterthought and has been a really dangerous forward, although not much this week. You know, like, youngsters like Jordan Clark's been really good. Guyron Myers, who's perhaps got the worst haircut in the AFL, has been a really productive small forward. Tim Kelly's been fantastic. The older guys have been producing as well. It's just... it's really annoying.
It is annoying. So Elbows Ablett actually has been really good since about the last five or six games of last year, and has continued that this year. Quite annoyingly, I don't know how it happened. I much preferred him when he was failing to kick the winning goal against us.
Yeah, Dal. Oh, I always liked Dalhouse as a player, but yeah, he's fitted in annoyingly well. Tom Stewart's recovered from what Dusty did to him in the 2017 final. Yeah, they're a genuinely good team.
Yeah, in fairness, outside Dangerfield, they don't really have elite talent.
Oh, Tim Kelly's been pretty.
Yes,
he's been good.
Yeah, but the AFL rankings don't love him.
Fickle creature.
It is. Must be related to low number of goal assists. But, yeah, his basic stats are magnificent. Just look at 24 a game. Yeah, one goal.
But I feel like there is a certain liberation in that. Like,
they're not expecting to win.
Not expecting to win, yeah. That their injury list is, you know, complementary. Fringe and complementary players. We've got, our top two, four of the top six, three of the top six, four of the top nine, from our best and fairest. Out at the moment, so, if we win, it's going to be fantastic.
Yeah, absolutely, no doubt. And a surprise and fantastic. And if we lose, we're still on the hunt.
I'm worried about our percentage.
I was kind of relieved that we kicked the two late goals, actually.
Yeah. Wow. It sort of numbed the pain just slightly.
Yeah. But, I have to say, about three or four weeks ago, I think I said to you, I just think with our injuries, I think 4-8 is a realistic landing spot for us.
Yeah.
And, 5-6, where you at least get a home final, is... and then you take your chances from there. We need to win a few of these harder games to get there. Still hard to finish 5th or 6th.
Yeah, look, we've given ourselves a really... We've won quite a few games of football, so we've given ourselves a really good chance. And there's not that many contenders this year, but a win would be great.
Agreed.
I'm Nick.
I'm Andy.
We're Richmond Tiger Talk.
For the strong and the bold who have been taunted and traumatised for over 37 years, this one is for you. Richmond, yes, Richmond, our premiers. 5:13 p.m. on Saturday, September 30, 2017, is officially Tiger Time.
We never reconcile.
Just a celebration of all good things Richmond right now.
Nothing going.
Alex Rance.
Never not going to go, was he? Was he?
Pick up from Cotchin. Left foot snap.
Something fantastic, and we just got to keep riding away.
Martin, 3 votes.